I want you to just, for a second, picture a federal courtroom. You can almost hear the air conditioning humming, you know, that low buzz of the lights.
And that tension, it's always so thick.
So thick. And you're a business owner, your pharmacy, your entire livelihood, it's all on the line. And up on the witness stand is the guy who put you there, a federal diversion investigator.
This is the moment, right? This is where everything that's been on paper for months finally gets spoken out loud, under oath.
Exactly. And the judge, a Judge Dowd, he leans over and he looks at this investigator and asks a question that is it's so basic you just assume you know the answer. He asks, did you talk to a single prescribing doctor to see if these prescriptions were legitimate?
And you're waiting for the, yes, of course, or at least, well, we made several attempts.
Right, but that's not what he says. Instead, the investigator just looks up and says, no, sir, that wasn't part of my investigation.
Wow, it just stops you cold. It feels like a line from a bad TV show, but this is real life. This is actual court testimony.
It is, and it just rips the curtain back on the whole conflict we're getting into today, mm-hmm. This clash between law enforcement, specifically the DEA, and the day-to-day on-the-ground practice of medicine.
Yeah.
So today, we are doing a deep dive into a, frankly, massive stack of documents all around the investigation of a place called Pronto Pharmacy. We've got court transcripts, a detailed summary of testimony from the investigator, Richard James Alpert, and some really sharp analysis from the blog, You're Within the Norms.
And our mission really is to untangle how this happens. How do the norms of medical care get so violently tangled up with the rules of enforcement?
Because it seems like it's not just about the rules, but how they're being interpreted or maybe misinterpreted.
Yeah.
We're going to look at how a fundamental misunderstanding of pharmacy 101 terms like compounding versus manufacturing, how that, combined with this really controversial red flag theory, led the government to target this one specific pharmacy.
Okay, so let's start there. With this red flag idea, it sounds so simple, right? It sounds like common sense.
Totally. Pharmacists see something weird, that's a red flag. Don't fill it. Simple.
But our sources suggest it is way, way more complicated. And to really get what happened to Pronto, you kind of have to zoom out first. The source material brings up this parallel with Walmart from a Wall Street Journal editorial.
I remember this. The DOJ sued Walmart, saying they filled thousands of invalid prescriptions.
Right. And Walmart's defense was, look, we're following state laws. If a licensed doctor writes a prescription, our pharmacists are generally required to fill it. They're not supposed to play detective and second guess a doctor's medical judgment.
Unless it's something totally obvious, I guess.
Exactly. And this is where the red flag theory gets so incredibly sticky. Because the source points out, and this is backed up by a lot of legal scholars, the Controlled Substances Act, which is like the Bible for federal drug law.
Yeah.
The words red flag are not in it. They don't appear in the statute.
Wait, what? For real?
Yeah.
So pharmacists are being held to a standard that isn't actually written into the law they're supposed to be following.
That's the conflict right there. It's the supremacy clause argument. State laws often require a pharmacist to fill a valid prescription. You have a duty of care. You can't just let a patient suffer because you have a hunch.
But then the federal government comes in with guidance, not law, but guidance, and says, well, you should have been more suspicious.
And if state law says fill it, but a federal investigator says you shouldn't have, who wins?
That is a trap.
It is. Walmart has a $1 billion legal team to fight that. But Pronto Pharmacy, a smaller, independent place, they're in a much tougher spot.
So let's talk about Pronto. What were they actually accused of? Because usually when the DEA gets involved like this, you're picturing, I don't know, back alley deals or something.
The allegations were very serious. The DEA accused them of manufacturing controlled substances, specifically oxycodone and hydromorphone, and of course, ignoring those red flags.
Manufacturing is such a heavy word. That sounds like they're running a pill mill in the back.
That is absolutely the implication. But the specific red flag that the investigator, Alpert, zoned in on was that prescriptions were being written for tablets, but Pronto was filling them with capsules.
Tablets to capsules. I mean, to me, that sounds like a preference. Why is that a federal crime?
Well, we're going to get into the weeds on that. But for Alpert, it was inherently suspicious. He saw it as them creating a whole new drug. And that brings us right back to that wild courtroom moment you started with. Alpert's on the stand under cross-examination.
And this is where his whole methodology just kind of unravels. Mm-hmm. The judge himself, Judge Dowd, jumps in and asks him point blank, is it part of your investigation to reach out to the prescribing physicians?
Which is the most logical first step, right? If you think the prescriptions are fake, you call the person who wrote them. You ask, hey, what's the medical purpose here?
Dr. Smith, why capsules? Is there a reason? It's so simple.
But his answer, as we know, was, "No, sir, that wasn't part of my investigation."
He didn't call the doctors, the people who actually hold the key to the entire question.
It's a huge hole. And then it gets worse. The defense attorney, a Mr. Sisko, he pushes a little more. He says, "Okay, fine, you didn't talk to the doctors. Did you talk to the patients?"
Let me guess.
"No, sir."
Wow.
He admitted he never spoke to a single patient. Instead, she used technology. He literally used Google Maps to track how far they were driving to get to the pharmacy.
And that distance was his red flag.
Yes. But he never asked them why they were driving that far.
See, that's where I get hung up. I drive past at least two other pharmacies to get to the one I use. The pharmacist knows me. The parking's easier. I mean, there are a million reasons. On a map, I'd look suspicious too.
It's the classic data versus people problem. Alpert seemed to believe the data itself, the spreadsheet of travel distances, the fact that they were filling capsules. That was enough to prove intent. He was investigating patterns, not people.
But Pronto Pharmacy, they weren't just winging it. Right? The sources talk about their protocols, something they called the form.
Right. This is the defense's big counterargument. They weren't ignoring the rules. They were trying to be extra careful. They had this memorandum for record, which everyone just called the form.
And every single patient had to fill this out.
Everyone. And it wasn't a simple sign-in sheet. You had to pay a $25 consultation fee and sign documents saying you understood the rules against diversion, basically promising you weren't going to sell the drugs.
So they were trying to build a paper trail to show they were being diligent.
That's the argument. They used this form, plus the state's prescription drug monitoring program, to actively screen for people who were pharmacy shopping. They were trying to vet their patients.
Okay, but the government's expert, this guy Donald Sullivan, he saw that form and basically called it a sham.
He did. He called it a subterfuge.
A trick.
A trick, yeah. He argued it was just a fancy way to cover their bases, to relieve the pharmacy of liability. His take was that they didn't actually care about diversion. They just wanted the signature on file. He even framed the $25 fee as a cover charge to make it all look legit.
That feels like a catch-22, though. If you don't document, you're negligent. If you do document, it's a subterfuge. How is the pharmacist supposed to win?
That's the point the source makes. They point out this protocol was approved by a pharmacy attorney. They bring up other experts, like a Dr. Dan Buffington, who said this was a perfectly valid way to establish a real patient-pharmacist relationship.
So let's get to the technical core of this, because I think this is the big aha moment in all the documents, the difference between compounding and manufacturing.
This is everything. And I think for most of us, those words are interchangeable. But in pharmacy law, they are completely different worlds.
Okay, break it down for us.
Manufacturing is mass production, a factory churning out tens of thousands of identical pills for wholesalers. It's heavily regulated by the FDA, think assembly lines.
Got it. And compounding?
Compounding is, it's almost like an art. It's creating a specific medication for one specific patient because the mass-produced version doesn't work for them for some reason.
So like if I'm allergic to the red dye in a pill, the pharmacist can make me a version without the dye.
That's a perfect example of compounding. Or, in Prano's case, changing a tablet into a capsule. Maybe the patient has trouble swallowing hard tablets. Maybe there's a filler they're allergic to. It's a totally standard practice as long as the doctor authorizes it.
Okay, so it's not just allowed, it's a necessary part of pharmacy.
Absolutely vital. But here's the kicker. Investigator Alpert on the stand seemed to have no idea about this distinction.
What do you mean, no idea?
The lawyer asks him if he's familiar with the FDA guidelines on compounding. Alpert's answer, no, sir. He says his training covered manufacturing, but not specifically compounding.
Wait, hold on. His whole case is built on the idea that this compounding pharmacy was illegally manufacturing. And he admits he wasn't trained on the difference.
It gets crazier. The defense attorney pulls out the subpoena Alpert sent to the pharmacy. It lists all these specific codes from the Florida Administrative Code, you know, state pharmacy laws.
Mm-hmm.
And the attorney asks, "You cited these laws in your subpoena. What do they mean?"
Oh, no.
Alpert admits he just used a template. He says, quote, "They're already in there, actually." He didn't know what the laws he was citing actually said.
That's just mind-blowing. He's using a fill-in-the-blank subpoena to threaten a business with laws he hasn't even read.
And this all circles back to the tablets versus capsules thing. To Alpert, that looked like illegal manufacturing. But to any compounding pharmacist, and under the law, it's a standard modification.
A modification he would have understood if he had just
called the doctors. It's a perfect loop of failure. He didn't understand the law, so the practice looks suspicious. And because it looks suspicious, he didn't bother to check if it was medically necessary.
It's like a storm of incompetence, but with the full force of the federal government behind it. And that force came down hard. The source describes this raid on August 29th, 2019.
Yeah, this wasn't a quiet audit. This was 35 agents. And one detail that really jumps out from the source, they say the agents disabled and destroyed the pharmacy's security cameras.
Destroyed them? Why would you do that? If it's a legitimate raid, don't you want the video evidence?
It raises huge questions about transparency. But beyond the physical raid, there was what you could call a soft raid happening behind the scenes, which was maybe even more damaging.
This is the wholesaler interference, the know your customer stuff.
Exactly. The source alleges that the DEA contacted Pronto's wholesalers, a company called Safe Chain Solutions was named, and basically pressured them to cut off their supply.
So they starved the business before anyone has even been convicted of anything.
It's an administrative death sentence. The wholesaler gets a call from the DEA suggesting a customer is risky, and of course they're going to drop them. They don't want to lose their own license. Pronto was crippled before they even got their day in court.
Now, we do have to touch on another really heavy layer to all this. The source material argues very strongly that this wasn't just incompetence. It claims race was a factor.
It's very explicit about this, yeah. Pronto Pharmacy is a black-owned business, and the source makes the case that these aggressive tactics, from the red flag theory to the wholesaler pressure, are disproportionately used against black pharmacists.
There's a quote in there attributed to a DEA agent. That's just pretty shocking.
It is. The source alleges an agent said, "It's about race. We don't enforce drug laws in white neighborhoods." Now, we have to be clear, we're reporting what the source documents claim.
Of course.
But the argument they build is that the entire investigation was result-oriented.
Meaning, they picked their target first and then went looking for facts to fit their conclusion.
The source uses the old phrase, figures don't lie, but liars figure. The argument is that if a white-owned pharmacy in a different area had the exact same data travel distances, compounding practices, it might have been praised as innovative patient care. But for Pronto, it was framed as drug trafficking.
It paints this picture of a system where the enforcer has all the power and almost zero accountability for their own knowledge gaps.
And that's the thing that should be scary for you listening to this. You assume the people enforcing these complex laws are the absolute experts on them. But this testimony shows an investigator who was learning on the job and people's lives were being ruined in the process.
It really does highlight how fragile professional practice can be. You can do everything by the book. Hire the lawyer, create the form, check the database, and still get crushed because an investigator used a template he didn't understand.
And it all goes back to that issue from the beginning. When federal agencies operate on guidance and suspicion instead of clear written laws, it creates this huge gray area. And in that gray area, bias, whether it's confis or not, can just run wild.
So where does this leave all of us, the person just trying to pick up a prescription?
I think it forces you to ask who polices the police. In these highly specialized medical fields, if the regulator doesn't understand the rules they're enforcing, is it really about safety? Or is it about something else entirely?
That's a heavy question to end on. We started with a simple no sir in a courtroom and ended up questioning the whole foundation of how these things are enforced.
And this case isn't just about one pharmacy in Florida. It's a case study and what happens when the norms of healthcare, you know, actually treating the patient in front of you, get steamrolled by the rules of a drug war that sometimes doesn't seem to care about the details.
We're going to leave it there for this deep dive. It's a lot to think about. The idea that an agency can just bypass state laws, use definitions that aren't even in the statute, and shut down a healthcare provider, that's something to sit with.
It definitely makes you look at that person behind your own pharmacy counter a little bit differently.
It sure does. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll catch you on the next one.